This is Bobby Humphrey. You're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM.
The song you just heard was Together by Betty.
Good evening. You're listening to Out FM, a progressive lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, two-spirit, intersex, queer, or questioning radio show from a progressive intersectional perspective. Out FM originates on listener-sponsored WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM, and on the web at WBAI.org. It's also heard on KPFK Los Angeles, LA, 90.7 FM, and streamed at kpfk.org. You can find our show at outfm.org. You can follow and like our posts on Twitter at outfm or our Facebook group and also our page, as well as Instagram. You can find links to these accounts at outfm.org. I'm Naomi Brussel, and tonight I am with
Pauline Park
and Stahimili Mapp.
And tonight, Naomi, Stahimili, and I will be talking about everything you always wanted to know about transgender, but were afraid to ask. Transgender identity is often thought of as a relatively recent phenomenon, and right-wing transphobes like to characterize it as a trendy fad. But in fact, there were people who anticipate contemporary transgender identities going back millennia. I'll be talking with Naomi and Stahimili what transgender is and isn't, and why right-wing Republicans are pushing an unprecedented wave of legislation in state legislatures across the country to limit and roll back the rights of trans people, and especially trans youth.
So why don't we start with why we decided to do the show?
Why indeed? Well, as I suggested, we're at a particular moment now when there are well over 200 bills. The Equality Federation says there are 269 bills pending in state legislatures across the country that are anti-trans, LGBTQ. Over 200 of them are specifically anti-transgender. So it's a moment of particular peril. And so we thought it would be important to inform our listeners about what transgender is and isn't, and why you should feel invested in transgender rights.
So this is going to be the first of a series. We'll probably do a couple more shows on other topics related to what we're talking about tonight. But today we're doing this recording on the Transgender Day of Visibility, which is March 31st, 2024.
And so to give you a roadmap of what we'll be talking about, we'll be talking about different ways that transgender can be defined. We'll talk a little bit about the historical background. Then, after a brief break, we will be talking about the relevant terminology and a diagram that will be useful in helping describe who and what the transgender community is. We'll be talking about trans as an umbrella term that has come into popular use in the last 20 to 30 years. And we'll end by discussing what kinds of questions would be acceptable to ask a trans person with regard to their gender identity, with regard to medical interventions such as hormones and surgery, and what kind of questions are to be avoided with anyone with whom you're not in an intimate relationship with.
So, Pauline, when you and I and Naomi were sitting down to talk about how we would approach talking about this topic, one of the first things, as you mentioned in your list, was how to define transgender. And you came up with, you told us that there were four different ways that we could define this. Let's start there. And you want to tell us about the four ways and give us some background on that?
Sure. Most people think transgender is one thing, but it's actually possible to think about it in at least four distinct contexts. First, there's a legal context. Now, the term of art that lawyers would use would be legal sex designation, but the popular term is gender marker, and we all have one. It's on your driver's license, it's an M or an F, it's on your birth certificate, it is on any government-issued ID. Now, in the last few years, there have been some local jurisdictions and a few states that have allowed for either no legal sex designation or something else. But for the most part, in the United States, in most of the 50 states, in most cities and counties, you are given a binary choice of male or female. And so when we're talking about transgender, in most cases, it means someone who is assigned to a legal sex as well as a social gender identity at birth based on their external genitalia. As a trans woman, I identify as a woman. However, I was sexed at birth as male based on external genitalia.
So what is the rule in New York City as far as that goes?
Until a few years ago, it was a very binary situation. But because of the work of some trans activists, and I was part of the group that helped advance this, it is now possible to have something other than M or F on your birth certificate. In most cases, that would be to eliminate the sex designation. Also, with regard to driver's licenses, which of course are issued by the Department of Motor Vehicles of the state of New York. So in some jurisdictions, you can either have no legal sex designation, in other words, have your M or F eliminated. It's also possible, because the city of New York issues this special ID, which is really targeted at immigrants, but there's a city of New York ID that you can have that will use the M or F that you identify with. So those are the options right now. Legal definitions, of course, should take into account the fact that you can change your biological sex, and we'll be getting into that momentarily, but some states have precluded that. Ohio and Tennessee are the two states that I'm aware of right now that preclude your changing the legal sex designation on your birth certificate or other state-issued identification. And that is extremely challenging and possibly even dangerous for trans people who fully identify with a gender identity that doesn't match the legal sex designation on their government-issued ID. So I mentioned biology. There are three other possible ways of thinking about transgender, to get a little bit technical here. There's biological. But the interesting thing is, like legal sex designation, biological sex can change. So, for example, if you undergo hormone replacement therapy, a lot of people associate that with menopausal, postmenopausal women who are female body. If you undergo HRT, it actually shifts your biology. So a male body that takes in estrogen or progesterone-based hormones rapidly becomes more female, and vice versa. A body that's female at birth can be masculinized through testosterone-based hormones. So legal and biological sex can be changed. There are two definitions of transgender that actually, at the moment, cannot change. One is genetic and the other is chromosomal. And they're, very closely linked. Obviously, at the moment, it's not possible to change your genetic sex. The genetic code in your DNA that sexes you as male or female. It's important here to point out that a small but significant portion of the population is intersex, born neither fully male nor fully female. And because of their DNA, it actually predisposes them to a whole range of possible conditions which will produce so-called ambiguous external genitalia. Now, the fourth possible way of defining sex or gender is chromosomal. We all have chromosomes. As with the genetic definition I mentioned, at the moment, it can't be changed. If you're assigned to the female sex at birth, your chromosomes cannot change regardless of hormones and surgery. Likewise, if you're assigned to the male sex at birth. One interesting little point. Fish and other animals can and, in fact, do change sex. Fish, frogs, a number of different creatures have been known to change sex, and the reasons for that are very complex. We don't have time to go into the science of it, and part of it has to do with chemical alterations to the environment that are human-engineered or catalyzed. So there are, in fact, animals, fish, other species that, oddly enough, change sex. The clownfish, which became famous as a species because of Finding Nemo, can change sex over time. So those are the four definitions of transgender or of gender or sex, but I think it's important to go into a little bit of history. And here I would just point out that I have two presentations on pollingpark.com for those who are interested in a little bit of historical background in the Asian Pacific region. And here I use a term that I invented, proto-transgenderal, which is proto-transgenderal, proto-transgenderal. And if you put that into the search box on pollingpark.com, this presentation will come up. I did a show a few months back for OutFM about proto-transgenderal identities and practices in pre-modern Asian and Pacific Islander societies and cultures. So you can go to the OutFM website to find that show, and you can also go to pollingpark.com to find my brief presentation on this history. But I would make the point that every pre-modern society had some sort of what Gilbert Hurt called a third subject, third gender subject position, a third sex, third gender subject position. In other words, people that we would call trans, people who are neither entirely masculine men nor entirely feminine women. So there's a whole history behind this that is important to think about when we talk about transgender.
Wow, that's really enlightening and very interesting. I'm especially interested in the biological and chromosomal conversation that you just had, because we do know that the term epigenetics really is a term that we know and understand in the biological research world that talks about the impact and effect of the environment on chromosomal expression. So I think that that's probably an area of really interesting investigation. If it's not going on now, it probably is, or it should be. Plus the fact that all human beings start out in the world as female. And it is under the development of the genitalia is under the control of the hormones. So I think that's probably something that might be interesting or interests me.
Yes. If you go online, and of course as we all know, a lot of misinformation on the internet, but there's also some very good information. If you search for 9 species of fish that change sex, you'll discover, for example, I mentioned the clownfish made famous by Finding Nemo, and also there are some varieties of salmon that we would call intersexed. They're called synchronous hermaphrodites and possess both ovaries and testes. So nature actually recognizes creatures that are neither entirely male nor entirely female, or change from male to female or female to male. So the phenomenon of what we might call transgender is not limited to human beings.
Mm-hmm. So the history for human beings of this category of person, can you tell me a little bit about like when the emergence of transgender behavior is seen, you know, over the last, is it centuries? Is it
millennia? How long is it? There is evidence of people that we would call trans. Obviously, that's a relatively contemporary term that's only come into general use in the last 20 or 30 years. But there are people who anticipate contemporary transgender identities going back to prehistory. You can find it through archaeological records, sculpture, painting, various representations, texts, and even in the Bible, there's references to eunuchs, and it's not entirely clear because of the vagaries of biblical translation whether they're referring to people who were male and then subjected to what at the time would have been a fairly crude castration, or whether they were intersex or something else. But even the Bible recognizes the existence of people that we would call transgender going back thousands of years in ancient Hebrew Judaic history. And every pre-modern society, both Western and non-Western, has evidenced some form of transgender identity. Native American ethnic groups, most every Native American group had a form of identity, transfeminine identity, and many of them had a form of transmasculine identity. So the interesting thing about right-wing discourse on transgender is it's totally ahistorical and actually quite incorrect, because even though obviously contemporary transgender identity is a very recent phenomenon, it has been anticipated in every European and non-European culture that I'm aware of.
So what about Christine Jorgensen? Well, this is very, very recent history.
Yes, relatively recent. Christine Jorgensen was a GI who famously transitioned and went to Denmark to have sex reassignment surgery, and was the best known trans person of her day. She was born in 1926. died in 1989. And when she transitioned in the 1950s, it was created quite a sensation. Her surgery was performed in September 1951, and it brought to public attention the fact that one could actually change anatomical sex, which most people up until that point had not known. The first sex reassignment surgery was performed in Berlin during the Weimar Republic era. And there's a film called The Danish Girl about Lily Elba, who was the first known person to undergo sex reassignment surgery.
Okay, so we're almost out of time for our first segment here. Anything else you want to add about the history?
Just go to PaulinePark.com.
Okay, Pauline Park.
And you'll find a load of transgender history on my website.
Great. Thank you.
Blue moon, you saw me standing alone without a dream in my heart, without a love of my own. Saying a prayer for someone I really could care for, and then there suddenly appeared before me the only one my arms will ever hold. I heard somebody whisper, please adore me, and when I looked, the moon had turned to gold. Blue moon,
heard the great Billie Holiday singing the popular classic Blue Moon, a song with music by Richard Rodgers to lyrics by Lawrence Hart, written in 1934, that has become one of the great standards of the American songbook.
So, listeners, we have come to that point in our program in which we have to now ask for your support, your monetary support, in keeping the station and Out FM on the air. We need to have your support. We need to have you donate to WBAI. And we need for you to specify that you're donating to the Out FM program, because we are at the point now in which we need to raise a certain amount of money per month in order to remain on the air.
For Out FM to remain on the air, specifically.
Exactly. I'm sorry if I didn't make that clear.
Okay,
yes.
So how much money do we have to raise?
If we don't meet our targets, then Out FM will cease to be on the air. So we need you to call.
Let's say the target. The target is $350 a month, of which we have a basic amount already pledged of $150. So that means we need $200 more from you. You can do it any way you like. You could do $10. You could become a VAI buddy for $10. And that way it will happen every month, and you'll be part of keeping us up on our goal for the month. You can pledge $50 at a time. You can pledge $25. That will make you a member of WBAI. These are all different possibilities.
And so if you want to support this station to keep Out FM on the air on WBAI, can they call a phone number?
The number is 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950.
And they also pledge online.
At give2WBAI. Give2WBAI. And there you will see various premiums that you can get for certain amounts of pledge money. So including something very important that we pitched a long time ago that has to do with, well, this is still Women's History Month.
Yep, last day of it.
And it is a thumb drive that has many, many different voices. You want to mention some of the voices, Danieli, that are on there?
Sure. The name of the title of the thumb drive, I guess, or the collection is the Women's History Collection. And if you donate at least $10 or $15 as a buddy even, you will be able to get the collection, which includes notable figures, queer figures, such as June Jordan, famous, wonderful
poet,
Black folk poet. When I was looking through the thumb drive, I noticed that Alice Walker is there in many locations. I think there's actually one part where she's reading from The Color Purple. There's a huge, huge collection of information and interviews by and with Angela Davis, Billie Holiday, Audre Lorde, and Adrienne Rich, just to sort of round it out. We have quite a few folks on that, women that are on that drive.
And you can pledge for that. Now we're going to give you the information again by going to your phone and calling 212-209-2950 or going online to give2WBAI. Let's repeat that one more time. This is a chance for you to support the existence of WBAI and to support the existence of our show. 212-209-2950 or give2WBAI. And that's the way you can help keep us on the air. So go ahead. It's your turn.
Thanks, Naomi.
And you've been listening and are still listening to Out FM, a progressive lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, two-spirit, intersex, queer, or questioning radio show from a progressive intersectional perspective. Out FM originates on listener-sponsored WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM, and on the web at WBAI.org. It's also heard on KPFK LA in Los Angeles, 90.7 FM, and it's streamed at kpfk.org. Let's go on to our next segment of our discussion about Trans 101.
I'm Pauline Park. So, Naomi, Russell, Stahimini, Map, and I have been talking with Naomi, Russell, and Stahimini, Map. And we've been talking about everything you always wanted to know about transgender, but were too afraid to ask. So in the first segment, we discussed why we were doing this show. We talked about four different definitions of transgender, and we talked about historical background. And the fact that transgender history really goes back to prehistory. And every pre-modern society had some sort of transgender identity. Now, what I'd like to have us talk about in the second half of the program is the terminology of transgender identity, and also what kind of questions you might appropriately ask a trans person about gender identity, and what questions are probably best avoided. So to begin with, visualize this. If you go to my website, PaulineParke.com, and put in concentric circles, the concentric circles diagram will pop up. But visualize, since this is radio, in your mind, three concentric circles like nested Russian dolls, and then a square to the side of the circles. So when I developed this diagram to explain the transgender community, it was when I was leading the campaign for the transgender rights law that was enacted by the New York City Council in 2002. And I developed it because I realized that most council members really had no idea who or what I meant when I was talking about the transgender community and the need to protect trans people from discrimination. So, and it's proved extremely useful in all my presentations since then. Anyway, as I say, if you put concentric circles diagram in the search box on PaulineParke.com, it'll come up. Since we're radio, I'd like you to do this visualization exercise. Imagine three concentric circles. The first and smallest circle we'll call transsexuals. Now, this term is a lot less used today, but in the 80s and 90s, it was certainly a very often used term of self-identification. The term refers to people who seek or have obtained sex reassignment surgery. There are various ways of referring to SRS. Some people like to use the term gender affirmation surgery, gender confirmation surgery. Transsexuals seek or have obtained it. They are a relatively small minority within the trans community because most don't. Those who seek it might be called preoperative transsexuals. Those who've obtained it might be called post-op. There's another subcategory of non-op transsexuals, and this category really kind of explodes the whole notion of transsexual because it basically refers to people who haven't sought surgery. Picture a second circle, which is larger than the first and encompasses the first. We'll call them the transgender. And this includes anyone who presents fully in the gender not associated with the sex they're assigned to at birth. So it could include, for example, not only transsexuals, but people who might identify, for example, as cross-dressers. The somewhat more old-fashioned term, transvestite, is now considered somewhat pejorative or clinical, though as Eddie Izzard still identifies as a transvestite. There are a few other terms that we have to know.
Who's that?
Eddie Izzard is a famous British entertainer.
Oh, okay.
Who's trans and does use the term transvestite to self-identify. Mm.
And trans entertainment is very popular and has been for a long time in the United Kingdom.
Yes, and there's a whole history of that that we could talk about too.
But we're not talking about that right now. Keep with the circles.
Yes. So two other terms that we should mention but are often misunderstood. Drag queen, drag king. There's a huge amount of attention right now because of Drag Queen Story Hour. These terms really refer to someone engaged in some sort of performance. It can either be a more formal performance, a drag queen on stage, for example, or a drag king, or it could be a much more informal thing, such as Halloween or what I would call fun drag at a pride parade. But even though some people do identify as drag queens or drag kings, for the most part, these terms refer to performance. There's a third circle. Picture a third circle, and I'll call these people the gender variant. And these are folks who transgress gender boundaries to some extent, but do not necessarily fully present in a gender not associated with their sex assigned at birth. So, for example, it could include relatively masculine women who still identify as women or girls, relatively feminine men who still identify as men or boys. The important point here is a misconception, the conflation of sexual orientation and gender identity. There are, in fact, gay, lesbian, bisexual, and heterosexual people in all these circles. These circles refer to gender identity and expression, not sexual orientation. Then picture a square, a big square, and these are people I would call the conventionally gendered. And most people in every society...
They're outside all the circles.
They're outside the circles. Picture the square standing outside the circles. And the square actually should be much bigger than circles because it's the majority in every society. Every society produces a certain code of conduct, certain rules and expectations for gender. And the majority of people, by and large, abide by those rules. As I mentioned before, this concept of fun drag, all sorts of heteronormative people do drag for Halloween or costume parties, so that doesn't count. The important thing to note here is that the conventionally gendered include gay men, lesbians, and bisexuals, as well as heterosexuals. Once again, sexual orientation is different from gender identity. And the other important thing to point out is that gender norms are different in different societies in different time periods.
Now, I'm sorry, Pauline, I do have a quick question.
Go ahead.
Since we're talking about that, you know, in these terms and umbrella terms, you know, I see this, these concentric circles, the large circle, and then the smaller one nesting inside of that, and then the smallest one nesting inside of that. There, you know, that's a great visual, I think, for folks to help them understand. But so where does the term non-conforming fit in, like, with all of this? And non-binary, where does non-binary fit in? I talk to people all the time, and they're like, I don't know what that means. Like, I know what it means, but I really don't know how it applies to the situation. Is it specifically transgendered, non-binary person?
Well, I would think about the largest circle and the gender variant, and that would include people who are non-binary as well as non-conforming. So the three circles are all people who are non-conforming, gender non-conforming to some extent. The non-binary would be certainly in the third and largest circle, and arguably in the second circle as well, because if they fully identify as non-binary, in other words, they don't identify as either male or female, men or women, then they are, in that sense, transgendered. Once again, go to transgender inclusion in academia. If you put transgender inclusion in academia in the search box on paulinepark.com, you'll see the circles diagram pop up right away. Transgender has an interesting kind of strange etymology, and there's some controversy where it started. Not everyone knows. No one is really certain how or when it began, but the most commonly accepted theory is that a trans woman named Virginia Prince created the term transgender to describe herself. Per the circles diagram, she might be called a non-op transsexual because she did not seek or obtain sex reassignment surgery, but she lived her life, her later adult life, as a woman. Later on, Virginia Prince started using the term transgender in the 60s and 70s. Later on, in the late 80s, 90s, other people started using the term differently. Leslie Feinberg, a noted activist and also the author of Stone Butch Blues and several other books, started to use the term transgender, as people do today, as an umbrella term for all three circles that I mentioned. In other words, anyone who's gender nonconforming, who transgresses gender norms. And so within the community, even though the term is used differently by different people, that's the most widely accepted definition, that transgender is an umbrella term that includes a spectrum, as people like to say, of different types of gender identities and gender expression. And I might point out, too, that there are three different usages for the term transgender. One is as a term of self-identification. So I identify as a transgendered woman. Second usage would be clinical. And so social service providers, psychologists, psychiatrists increasingly use the word trans. In the old days, they might have used the term transsexual. Some still do. But now transgender as a term is popping up in healthcare and social services contexts. So self-identification, clinical usage. Third usage is political. And I certainly, as a transgender activist, use it that way, because before the term transgender came into general use, you had a bunch of different terms, none of which were all that amenable to political activism. And transgender is useful as an umbrella term because it brings together a whole variety of different people under one umbrella to advance an agenda of social change and social justice.
Very good. That was helpful. That was helpful.
So the last issue we need to discuss is, when is it appropriate to ask a trans person or someone you might think is transgendered about their gender identity?
Right. So when is it? Because people are very anxious when they
people want to know. This. You know, that's right. And I think, you know, So let me let you go with that, Pauline. I'm sorry to cut in.
No problem. I think the general rule of thumb is that asking a general question about transgender identity, I think, is perfectly appropriate. So if you think someone is trans, but they haven't acknowledged or come out to you, then if it's not too awkward, if there's an appropriate moment in the conversation, you can start talking about gender identity. So for example, you could say, my personal pronouns, my preferred pronouns are he, him, or she, her, or they, them, right? And that would be an opening for the person you think might be trans to respond. If it's appropriate in the context of a discussion and it's not too awkward, you can introduce the general discussion and say, you know, there's just this wave of anti-trans, anti-LGBTQ legislation in state legislatures. What do you think about that? That's perfectly perfect.
So actually, in that way, you identify yourself as being opposed to these,
right,
this legislation. I mean, you're not saying, well, don't you think you ought to be, you know, controlled? You're not saying that to the person. You want to say it very carefully. Right.
If you can, if for example, it's a context of a bunch of people you know to be politically progressive or LGBT supportive, then you can sort of slip it in there and introduce it in a general way. What trans people I know would take umbrage at is asking them direct questions about their anatomy or biology or what medical interventions they've undergone. And that has happened to me more times than I would have liked. So asking someone, first of all, directly asking someone if they're trans can actually put them off, because it can come across as either a challenge or in a situation in which it's a mixed group of people, they might feel a bit threatened. There's a number of cases of where this has happened and it's led to very unfortunate situations and even tragedy. Now, So it is really never appropriate to directly ask someone if they're trans or non-binary, if they're not acknowledging it themselves in some way. Now, if they have, you know, a trans flag or a t-shirt that says non-binary, then it's perfectly appropriate to ask them, what is that all about, you know, in a nice way. It is also never appropriate to ask about their anatomy or biology. Unless you are someone's intimate partner, in which case you probably already know, then it is really not your business. Now, if someone volunteers something, then you can follow that up. And then finally, with regard to hormones and surgery, once again, any kind of medical intervention, you should leave that for the trans person to start off the discussion. If they give you an opening for some reason mentioning surgery or hormones, I just went on T last week, or my
T is what?
Testosterone for those mm-hmm. who are transmasculine, going from female to male, something like that. Or if they say something like, I am part of a collective or consortium of people who are pushing for more access to medical interventions, then that might lead to a conversation where you could appropriately ask. But in general, it is best to ask questions only of a general nature about gender identity, gender expression, etc., and allow the person you think might be trans to divulge their gender identity for themselves. There may be many legitimate reasons why they may not. If it's a mixed group of people, they might feel uneasy. They might feel it might even out them to someone who might be hostile. So follow the lead of the trans person or the person you think is trans in that conversational situation.
Now, personal pronouns or preferred pronouns, the person's pronouns are not going to tell you whether or not they're transgendered or not. Is that true?
Not necessarily. In and of itself, possibly. Although if they say my preferred pronouns are they and them, then you can assume they're non-binary. But right. If you say my pronouns are such and such, that could lead to a conversation in which they would divulge their gender identity.
So they might feel more comfortable to say it at that point if you've raised it in that way.
Exactly. And so for more information, feel free to go to not only outfm.org and listen to the program on Asia and the Pacific, and or go to paulingpark.com. I have tons of information about transgender. If you just put transgender in the search box, or transgender inclusion in academia, to find the famous concentric circles diagram.
Thank you very much, Pauline Park, a long-time intense activist for the rights of all oppressed people, and specifically for transgender people.
And this is Pauline Park with Stahimili Map and Naomi Brussel. We've just been talking about everything you wanted to know about transgender, but we're afraid to ask. Where else but on OutFM, here on WBAI, would you hear a program that gives you such detailed information and background about transgender identity issues? Naomi, if people would like to support OutFM to keep it on the air on WBAI, is there a phone number people can call?
Yes, there is, and it's very crucial that you make the call as soon as possible, because we really need to keep the support for WBAI and for OutFM as high as possible. Here is the number, 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. And you have another option, which is to go online to give the number 2 WBAI, give to WBAI, and then you will see there a number of premiums that you can get depending on the level of your pledge. And making a pledge and fulfilling your pledge gives you the opportunity, if it's $25 or more, gives you the opportunity to be a member of WBAI. Our best bet here for you to keep us on the air and to keep our regular amount of money that we are directed to raise, which is $350 a month, the best way for us to know that that's going to continue is for you to do what's called a buddy pledge, to be a sustaining member. And you can then put in $10 a month, you can put in $15, you can put in $20. Whatever, we have a basic amount that we know that we can count on of $150 a month, but we need the other $200 in order to fulfill our goal. So that's one of the things you can do. And there are many different kinds of premiums that you can get if you make these pledges. The number, again, is 212-209-2950. Tell the person who answers the phone that you're pledging for Out FM on WBAI, so it's clear that that's helping us to meet our show's particular goal.
So we are also planning a fundraiser for WBAI during Queer Pride Month and one of the three weekends in June. So be aware and look out for information on that. We also need a location, so if you know a backyard or any other outdoor location that we can use at no charge for the afternoon, please email at us at outfmfeedback@wbai.org. outfmfeedback@wbai.org.
But the backyard has to be somewhere in New York City. I just want to tell you
that. Yeah, somewhere in New York City. Yeah. So please do that. And please pledge for our show. We are offering as a premium the Women's History Collection, still Women's History Month, and even if it wasn't, you could still pledge for it. Some great women that are queer women on that pledge in that collection, which includes the illustrious work of Lorraine Hansberry herself, Angela Davis, Billie Holiday, Audre Lorde, June Jordan, Alice Walker, just to mention a few, and Adrienne Rich. Don't forget Adrienne. So make sure you do that. Make sure you pledge for us, Out FM on WBAI, because if we don't get those pledges, we will get bounced.
Okay, so the number again is, and here's your last reminder, 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950, or go online to give, the number 2, WBAI, give to WBAI. And as we said earlier, you're going to be able to see all the premiums that are available for all the shows, but be sure you make it clear that you're giving this on behalf of your devotion. No, not devotion. That's a little too much. You could say we're your favorite show, and that you're giving it in on behalf of that connection you have to Out FM. 212-209-2950 or give the number 2 WBAI. Closing out our show. You've been listening to Out FM on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. We want to say thanks to our engineer, Max Schmid, and also to John Riley, our technical person who's keeping us on the best sound that you can possibly hear coming from three of us. I'm Naomi Brussel.
I'm Pauline Park.
I'm Star Billy Mack.
If I'm bell, I'm ringing at night. you're filing taxes, you may be eligible for some pretty unique deductions. For instance, there are write-offs for clarinet lessons. Or, if you hired your cat for pest control, apparently there's a tax break for that too. But, if you don't think you'd qualify for pet-related deductions, you could just donate a vehicle to WBAI. It's easy, free, and tax-deductible. Here's how it works. Call 866-WBAI-CAR. That's 866-922-4227. Or complete the online form at wbai.org/donateyourcar. From there, our vehicle donation support team will take care of everything, including the pickup, sale, and provide you with a donation receipt. If your vehicle sells for more than $500, you'll also receive a 1098C tax form. So, instead of writing off your cat patrol, you can support programs like the Cat Radio Cafe by donating a car, truck, RV, or boat. Call 866-WBAI-CAR or visit wbai.org/donateyourcar to get started.
Well, Mark, time to watch the frogs eating the flies.
Yep, then off to the neighbors to watch the paint dry.
Mr. Wilson, Mr. Wilson, the trains are coming, the trains are coming.
Land sakes, it's the Arts Express pulling into the station with goodies for all of us.
Well, it's about time. Looky, there's presents for everyone.
Look, Pa, it's a preview of the latest indie feature.
And Ma, it's an interview with a major Broadway theater actor.
And I got some shiny new film reviews from film festivals all over the world.
And here's cutting-edge poetry from the country's most progressive poet.
Oh, sweet Lord, it's a miracle.
No, it's not. It's Arts Express with host Prairie Miller.
That's Arts Express with host Prairie Miller at our new day and time, Wednesdays at 9 p.m. on WBAI New York.
Every day is Earth Day. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Donna Stein. Every week we bring you environmental experts and activists, plus news, in-depth information, and solutions to environmental problems.
Join us at our new time, Wednesdays at 10 a.m. right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org.
Wednesday mornings, 10 a.m. When your air or water are clean, thank an environmentalist. If not, become one. Enough said.
Of a parking lot.
Remember, the whole reason New York City housing, the NYCHA housing, was built the way it was Corbusier understood that if he did not have light coming in every window and if every room did not have air and light, people could not thrive. That was the whole reason for getting rid of the tenements that go with it.
Maureen Coates, environmental lawyer with Planet A Strategies. Hi, I'm Michael G. Haskins, host of Living for the City on WBAI 99.5 FM, Wednesdays at 11 a.m. Every week, myself and senior producer Jillian Jonas take an in-depth look at the city of New York as it is developing right before our very eyes. We bring on grassroots organizations fighting to have their voices heard in how the community in which they live will grow and prosper into the future. So tune in to Living for the City Wednesdays at 11 a.m. over listener-sponsored WBAI 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web.
Remember, the whole reason New York City housing, the NYCHA housing, was built the way it was Corbusier understood that if he did not have light coming in every window and if every room did not have air and light, people could not thrive. That was the whole reason for getting rid of the tenements that go with it.
Maureen Coates, environmental lawyer with Planet A Strategies. Hi, I'm Michael G. Haskins, host of Living for the City on WBAI 99.5 FM, Wednesdays at 11 a.m. Every week, myself and senior producer Jillian Jonas take an